Caitlin Bristow hosts the hilarious, relatable, always honest, kind of feels like you're hanging out with your best friends podcast Off the Vine every Tuesday and Thursday. Tuesday episodes are interviews with guests like Wells Adams, Rachel Lindsay, Nikki Glasser, and Lisa Vanderpump to talk about everything from career to relationships to mental health. Thursday's episodes are called Grape Therapy, which are sometimes bachelor recaps, sometimes giving advice and hearing from listeners on the Vine hotline, or sometimes just catching up with a friend. Listen to Off the Vine with Caitlin Bristow wherever you get your podcast. We've all been there. You have a question about your credit card. You call the number for help and can't get a hold of anyone. If only you had a Discover card. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. A real person. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card. All right, y'all, things are about to get intense. Like, we're staring into the eyes of our lifelong crush for a minute straight, intense. Intense heat, lasting plump from the hot new Lifter Plump from Maybelline, New York. It's formulated with chili pepper, delivers a heated sensation for an instant lip plumping effect that lasts. It's available in 8 sizzling shades. My favorite I've been wearing the past few days is the Blush Blaze. Y'all, this color is beautiful. But when I say the sensation is intense, it is. It feels like, in the best way possible, you rubbed a jalapeno all over your lips. So if you love that sensation, you are going to love this. Can you take the heat? Find your shade at Maybelline.com or a retailer near you. Amazon shoppers get 10% off Lifter Plump purchase with code 10PLUMP for a limited time. Seriously, y'all, like, this color is beautiful and the heat is piping. Hi, I'm Hannah Brown and welcome to Better Tomorrow. My absolute favorite thing to do is have a heart-to-heart talk with my new friends and my best friends, where we sit down and talk about all the things like relationships and love, faith and self-care. And of course, the little things as well, like the struggle to figure out what to eat tonight. All in all, I really want to ask, how am I better today than yesterday? And bring artists, entrepreneurs, and friends along on the journey. So join me on the journey, will you? Hey y'all, welcome back. I'm so glad that you're here. Oh, such a busy time. And it got a little bit busier for me because I'm recording this before I head out to Los Angeles. I got told, I think like on Thanksgiving, maybe the night before, that Dancing with the Stars wanted to have some of the old champs to come back and do like a fun Christmas dance, and it was a surprise. So if you watched last night for the finale of Dancing with the Stars this season, hopefully you saw your girl. As of now, I haven't got there yet. I don't know what to expect. I don't know if I'm just doing like a little 5, 6, 7, 8, you know, a few 8 counts, or if it's a whole dance. If it's a whole dance, I'm probably going to be really nervous because I have not danced in a hot minute. So we have rehearsals for 2 days. So I'm hoping it's more. It's weird because like I don't want it to be like only like 1 8 count of me, like a spin and then a point to camera. Like that would be a bummer. I would love to do like a little bit more than that. But I'm also like, okay, I am not in the routine as I was on Dancing with the Stars of learning dances in the matter of a day or two. So I am very interested to see how that goes. Hopefully you're listening and you're like, oh my gosh, you killed it, Hannah. It was a little bit more than a 5, 6, 7, 8, but not a full 3-minute dance routine. That is my hope. That is where, how I'm hoping I'm coming into today in real time, feeling like it was so much fun and I killed it, but who knows? But that was definitely an unexpected little treat because I am not only going to LA right before the holidays, but I am off today, as if you're listening to this Wednesday when it came out, on my way to Puerto Rico. So we're celebrating a friend's birthday. I've never been, so I hope it's going to be fun. So yeah, maybe we'll get a real tan instead of this spray tan I've got on right now. What else is new? Okay, I really just have to talk about The Golden Bachelor because, oh my gosh, I obviously, you know, have more knowledge about that world than most because of, you know, being the Bachelorette and being on that side. And I texted the executive producer as I was watching the finale last week. And let me pull up what I put. In all caps, the first thing I wrote was, why? Then another text, why Gary? And then the next one was, the next one was all caps, why did he say all those things to Leslie? And then the next one was, first faith, now this, I can't handle it. So, I mean, at this point, it's not a spoiler. Like, I was so shocked that after all the things that he said, first to Faith, you know, she was the top three. I really thought it was going to be Faith and Leslie at the end of the thing because he had told them both on their hometowns that he loved them. And just the way that he was like talking to them as a lead, I remember just trying to be really cautious of what I said. Like, I didn't say I love you to any of my guys until it was the last guy there. I said I was like falling in love for sure, but some of the ways that he was saying things, I was like, whoa, that's pretty bold. So I thought he was like totally all in with Leslie by the way that he had just kind of talked to her the whole time, saying you're my girl and stuff. I was like, oh my gosh. And so when he broke up with her, I was shocked because I'm like, Gary, you cannot be saying all these things. You cannot do this. He told her that he had chose her, and we don't even know what really happened in the overnight. Whatever he must have said to her made her 100% sure. 100% sure. That is, it was just so heartbreaking watching her get hurt. And I loved her the whole time. I thought she was like such a strong woman, and the way that she was able to articulate herself, even in her like devastation, how she just really articulated everything I was thinking, because she has been through so much with her relationships. Like, her whole thing was never feeling chosen, and he kept telling her and reiterating those things, and she kept being a little timid of like, hey, this is my trauma. This is how I've been hurt. Like, I didn't have this, you know, beautiful, long-lasting marriage. I had two failed marriages because of not feeling chosen and being betrayed in ways. So this is really hard for me. And he kept reassuring her that he understood and affirming the way he felt about her. I was like, okay, dude, what happened? And look, it's so hard on that side of things. I get it. Like, poor Gary. I still love Gary. But I was distraught, and I had to text the executive producer about it. And I was like, I just love Leslie. I want to hug her, and I'm just cheering her on so much. And also, she's so hot. Like, how do you look like that at 64? And he just said back, he's like, I know, but the heart wants what it wants. And I also, and I want to say, like, I'm so happy for Teresa and Gary. I just feel like we have to be so careful with our words. And in that situation, it's unlike anything else. And I have so much compassion for, you're just trying to do what you feel like is right in that moment. And maybe it wasn't the best way to handle things. And I think we know that, but I want to make sure I say that, like, I'm super, have empathy for all people involved, but it just like broke my heart. Cause I genuinely knew he liked Teresa, but I did not think that was the way it was going to end up. But I'm really happy for both of them, and they seem so sweet, and like, they're getting married, so they are having a live wedding for Bachelor Nation to watch on January 4th, which I'm so happy, and I love it. It's like they only have like their last years to live together, and why wait? So I think that is super cool that they've gone all in. But even the EP on the show, one of them was like, yeah, it wasn't how I thought it was going to go, but you know, we're really happy for them. So it all worked out. There's a love story in the end, and I really hope that they do a golden bachelorette. And I'm just going to say, like, I want my girl Leslie. At first, I was like, okay, my girl Faith, I'm going to be so excited for her as golden bachelorette, because I thought, I just for sure thought that it would be Leslie and him at the end. But Leslie just, she's babe, total babe. I loved that show so much. I'm so excited to and hope they continue to have the Golden Bachelor and Bachelorette. I'm just really invested in it and think it's just a sweet and nice change of things to see people with so much wisdom and in real life experience with love and loss share their love story. It's really cool. So, wow, sorry. I just had to talk to someone about that. I mean, I'm talking to everyone about it, but I had to talk to you guys about my thoughts. I ended up being like, Adam, please just, I don't know what's about to happen, so I need you to record this, because on the date where Gary broke up with Leslie, I was like, something's about to happen because he's acting too weird on this last chance date. So I was like, I need you to put it up. So I have the whole thing recorded of my reaction of being like, what the crap is happening? Who would have thought these old bucks were going to give us so much drama? It was great though. But to the episode today, I love our guest, Kate Bowler. I just love the way that she is able to, yes, have gratitude for all the blessings in the world, but also be able to say, sometimes life kind of sucks and that's okay. And it doesn't go our way. And how do we keep moving forward with hope but also realizing that it's okay that, like, we hurt, that we're scared, that we're mad at God, that we don't understand. And so we really dive into that in this conversation. And I feel like we just really connected. Kate actually came here during the holiday season to go to a charity event and invited me to go with her. And like, we've only met through the podcast, and I've obviously been a fan of her work. She's written some really awesome books. So that's how we connected initially, but then met for the first time for the podcast. And now she invited me to go to this event with her, and I was like, sure. And she's like, wow, I'm really impressed that you're going with, like, almost a complete stranger to this event that I also don't know exactly what's going on, and I don't know people here. And I'm like, it'll be fun. I like you. I want to, like, I think when you're meeting new people and you really like them, you have to, like, invest. And I'm learning that so much more in what they have going on and showing up. And so I wanted to show up for her like she was showing up for another friend. And we went to this party and it was so fun. And anyway, she's just a great human. And I just feel really supported by her and encouraged by her and, like, my own work. And I want to share what all that she does with you guys. So I think that you'll really love this podcast and the conversation that we have. I don't want to talk too much about it without just, like, going into it. So I hope you guys just enjoy this conversation with Kate Bowler. I am so excited that Kate Bowler is in the house.
Yay! I'm, like, really looking forward to this.
I feel like you've made it your mission to make everybody feel like it's okay to just be as they are and be a human being. And you don't always have to be better tomorrow, but we still, like I said, I have to try, but we can just be.
Oh, I'm with you in that. Absolutely. But
I'm really trying to be optimistic that it's going to be better.
Yeah.
And if it's not, it's not. I always say when I'm talking about, like, better tomorrow,
yeah,
I use it as, like, I'm sorry right now. I'll try to be better tomorrow.
Lovely.
It's not a guarantee. But we like to have conversations that will,
yeah,
at least help us on the way. And I feel like just everything that I've read of yours that has inspired me about you does help me get through the days that aren't so great. And I'm just glad that we get to have this conversation because you just, I know me saying, you're such an inspiration for your strength and courage. You're like, what? Because I know your whole thing. Because you're just human. And I'm sure, like, yeah, you have things that maybe you weren't as courageous. And there is fear. But the way that you have gone through everything that you've gone through that we'll get into and simultaneously, wow, been able to share that with other people through your books. And guys, if you haven't read them, we're just going to go ahead and make sure I say it right. You wrote two books while you were battling what you thought was an incurable cancer, colon cancer, stage 4, right?
Yeah, that's right.
You wrote two books for other people called Everything Happens for a Reason and Other Lies I've Loved and No Cure for Being Human and Other Truths I Need to Hear. I never noticed that the little
parentheses. I love a good
how they went together. Yeah. I love that. Thanks. And I found you through your first book and you like talking to everybody about that. But now in that moment, you thought you had incurable cancer.
Yeah.
But now you're here cancer free. So how does that all feel?
Yeah, what's going on there?
Yeah. Yeah. Really?
Well, because it's been it is so the roller coaster of life is sort of just never lets you off. Mm-hmm. And I started writing mostly because, well, entirely because I got a stage 4 cancer diagnosis in September and I thought I was going to die by June. And I thought, well, I guess it's time to like put all my cards on the table. Like, what do I really believe? Didn't I sort of hope that life was going to be easier than this?
Mm-hmm.
Aren't I actually like kind of angry, honestly, at God? Because I was pretty, I know you're not supposed to be like, I was really great, but I was like pretty great. We were just like, I mean, had I participated in, you know, terrible crimes against humanity, I'd be like, fine.
Yeah.
And I was like, I thought I did what I was supposed to do. And then life hands me this. So for the first year, and really so much of the time about being sick is just you being bored in hospitals. You think it's going to be some like existential fight against like a Rocky montage. And it's instead like filling out paperwork or sitting in waiting rooms. So I wrote that book, Everything Happens for a Reason and Other Lies I've Loved, because it was like the sweetness of the lies that I was trying to really think through. And if I could reckon with my life more honestly, then maybe I could learn how to live like that. Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of what the writing became, was how do I learn to live like this, whatever this happens to be? And for the first 2 years, it was just like high drama surgeries all the time. And then it became the more boring parts about being sick where people don't know you're sick and your hair grows back. Then they go, you look so great. And you're like, thanks, my life is horrible. Quietly.
Yes.
and then eventually I was like kind of doing okay.
Yeah.
And in all of it, I guess what I've been trying to practice is how do I learn how to speak more honestly about the life that I'm really living, and how maybe do I have any tools to help other people do that too?
And that's what I find so refreshing, because there's like this self-help or like Christian book culture that everything's always like, somebody will tell a story of a hard time, but there is always this like beautiful bow at the end. Totally. That's not really how life is. And that's when I like kind of discovered your writing. It was like, yes, I know that I'm getting better through all this. Like, it's, life is teaching me something, but I really didn't want to be taught this lesson. So
you said it perfectly.
This was not a course I signed up for that I was interested in.
Exactly. So, this is entirely, yes, we are of the same heart and mind.
Like, there's been a lot of things that I'm like, when people ask, like, would you go back and change your, like, the regret? Like, do you regret anything? I'm like, yeah, there are some things I would probably go back. And I don't even want to really go back to that place. But yeah, I don't know if I would love, I loved everything that happened. Yes, there were so many great, That's our culture. It makes us do that.
And the reason why we can't even just like say it. I mean, and I just love that you just said, oh, no, I definitely have regrets,
yeah.
Which people hate. The only correct response is, but it made me who I am today.
Yes.
And that's apparently supposed to stick the landing on, I mean, it could be anything.
Yeah.
But I do think that we've got these, and I think the language that really helps me is I realize that so much of the difficulty about being honest is that we have really tight cultural scripts about what we're supposed to say, women in particular, and the sort of last notes of that song always have to be gratitude, no matter what. I learned everything, no matter what. I could never possibly go back, no matter what. And that everything is always, nothing is wasted. Everything is always leading to something. And I think trying to say the two things at the same time feels almost impossible. That one, that we almost always find something kind of precious, like this mm-hmm. little glittering gem in the rubble of the crap of our lives. And also most of it might be useless or we wish we could skip.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love it if that were kind of more culturally acceptable to say.
I was thinking about that because, and wanted to ask you what you thought about, I feel like sometimes when you see people be really honest about how they are, you get people, first of all, look at you like you're crazy in person. Or if you do it on social media, it's like, okay, we know you went through something bad. Can you get over it now and start posting pictures of sunsets? I feel that way. Sometimes I'll talk about like, I've definitely been on a journey with my mental health, and I'll have people be like, okay, we get it. Can you like, you know, and why are we like that? I guess just like, why as a culture are we like that? Because yeah. I can also see there's maybe sometimes I've internalized that for other people, even though I'm obviously going, I've been on the other side, that kind of sucks. And it's like, oh, so I can't be that honest. You really just like when I post cute pictures of me and my boyfriend, or now my fiance, and yeah. my dog. And yeah. that's what you like.
Totally.
But not actually.
Totally. My real self. Yeah. And also an unfinished problem because someone out there is like, TikTok.
Yeah.
I think there's certain kinds of problems that we have an especially low tolerance for.
Mm-hmm.
Illnesses we can't see. So that includes all mental illness. Anything where you're not like holding, we have a prop cast on, like at a neck brace. You're like, oh, it might not be that bad. Emotional pain. And that goes for like the breakups and sadness of all kinds. Mm-hmm. The loss of friends. It could be acute grief. It could be moving somewhere and missing people or and feeling lonely. I mean, any emotional pain we can't see. And I think especially problems we can't immediately imagine the end of. So anything that's, because this is partly why I started saying to myself, because I had chronic cancer and it was like for years and years and years. And they'd be like, how are you? And I'm like, still have cancer. I feel kind of like embarrassed saying it, where I'm like, it's still
there.
Sorry that that's boring because you already have that information. But I started saying like life is a chronic condition and we're all in the middle of something, and it's much harder to explain being in the middle than it is to sort of when we always want to be at the beginning or the mm-hmm. end.
I'm going to ask you about the before and after. I think the middle is where all the mess happens and where
yeah.
it kind of sucks, but there are some gems.
Yes.
And those make it all worth it. I just love that you talk about that because I'm like, it gives me the freedom.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of other people to be like, this freaking sucks.
Totally.
And I'm tired of just being grateful.
We are full of people selling a cure.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really, I mean, like gratitude, for example. When I was in the thick of the hardest part of not being sure if every choice I was making was a life or death choice. This surgery, that surgery, will I die on the table? Will I just dramatic, awful things all the time? I kept a big whiteboard over my fireplace, and I would write every lovely, tiny bit of grace that I had been given.
Mm-hmm.
A kind nurse, like gummy worms from the, you know, waiting room. I just, every little thing that I needed to add up to something beautiful. And that's been, those moments have been mm-hmm. gifts. Being able to recognize the lovely things that are in our life is a way that the present gets given back to us, even when the future is absolutely terrifying. On the other hand, those are strategies. They're not solutions to the problem of being a person. And if there were a cure for all of this, for despair and grief and ultimately death, we would have found it by now. So it's just us. It's just mm-hmm. us mucking around. But this hyper-positive thinking culture is mostly, honestly, because the health and wellness industry is a $12 billion a year industry. And they wouldn't be selling it to us if they didn't want us to buy it. So when we stop buying things, I think we'll feel a little less like we're one facial cleanse and juicing recipe away from.
But I think there's like this piece that can come over you when it's like, there really is no cure for life happening to me. And sometimes it just happens and I didn't manifest it.
No.
It just happens. The good and the bad.
Yeah. That's right? It. That's it. And like most of what will define our life happens to us, not through us, not just to us. Mm. And it's us learning to respond with love and compassion and whatever grace we can find that then defines our character. Mm-hmm. So, but that's different than to say, well, we can only control our response and therefore like we have all the power. We actually have very little power, but what little power we have is it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful.
It really is. There's one thing that I heard you say about what gratitude is for you. It's like something you said, like it's the glue that sticks all the good things together. It's something I might have butchered that, but I love that because it's just reminding like, oh, today I woke up and I had my tea was really great.
Yeah.
That's it. Like just, or the person at the counter selling makeup was really nice, and hold on to those things when life sucks, but it isn't like, that doesn't cure anything.
Yeah.
It just makes it a little bit more bearable. Is that why I do gratitude in some way? Or do you even
say you do? Yeah. I guess I just think of it like it's small math. It's like small, good math. Mm. And like it really does add up to something. And I mean, you know, if a day was like a bad, bad day and it was, you know, 8 hours of chemo and it was health bills I couldn't afford. And if you add all that stuff up, the math of what's hard is those are big numbers. Mm-hmm. So I needed something in the other column. And it turns out that it's always the same thing. Mm-hmm. It's beauty. It's people being hilarious. It's the nurse I had that used to let me pretend that he was a vampire. And that when I left, that he used my blood for his own purposes. And I thought it was so funny.
That's awesome.
And he would like really creepily stroke my vein when he take the blood draw.
Like, he like really went for it.
Yeah, he did. And he was like, he always made it seem like he was like glad when I left the room because he just wanted his alone time. That made my whole day.
Yeah.
So it's just the same thing. It's just jokes and delicious food and people who love you.
Yeah, love.
Just putting it together.
Yeah.
But we're all just putting it together. I mean, anyone who thinks that they've got it mapped out is just honestly having a moment, a wonderful season of luck. And when people are in that season, I want to be like, bless you. There are these seasons where we get it, like wind in our sails. Mm-hmm. And if anyone was in that moment, they should not feel bad. Like it is a gift. Mm-hmm. But when it ends, I don't want that same person to then wonder what it was about them that caused them to crash. It's just being a person. Mm-hmm.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
How is your social battery right now? Because mine has been a little drained. I feel like it's because, honestly, this weather here in Nashville, I feel like I haven't seen the sun that much. And I'm just needing a little bit more time outside, some more walks, just being more social, not just as cooped up. And it can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. What's the right amount of socializing for you and how do you recharge? For me, I actually need to be a little bit more social. So I get excited and then can overwhelm myself a little bit too much with all the plans that I've had. But maybe you need a little bit less time and need some time to yourself to recharge. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/tomorrow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/tomorrow. There have been many times in my life where I really thought I could trust my gut, but I definitely shouldn't have. Definitely with a lot of those exes in the past, when it comes to that low fuel flashing light on my car, I just always think that it's not really serious. Trust me, it is. I've been on the side of the road way too many times. Probiotics can't help with most of your gut decisions, but if your gut needs a little support, Ritual has your back. Ritual has made a 3-in-1 supplement with clinically studied prebiotics, probiotics, and a postbiotic to support a balanced gut microbiome, all in one minty capsule and no refrigeration needed. I love my Symbiotic Plus. I take it every day. It's great because it's got all the biotics in it for my probiotic. I feel like it's just really helping my gut in all the ways. And actually, Ritual even invested in a study modeling the human colon, which showed that Symbiotic Plus significantly increased the microbial diversity and the growth of beneficial bacteria. We love that. We love when the thing's actually doing the work that we need it to for our gut. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/Hannah B. Start Ritual or add Symbiotic Plus to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/Hannah B for 25% off. Peloton helps you start no matter what level you're at. Wherever you're starting, there's thousands of classes to get you moving. Whether that's beginner advanced rides, feel-good DJ rides, or artist theme rides, they've got something for you. Peloton bike instructors keep you motivated from day one. They'll show you the basics, help take the guesswork out of your workout, and encourage you to build from there. Peloton Entertainment keeps you moving. Watch your favorite TV shows and live sports as you ride, perfect for those days when you don't want to miss a thing. I love my Peloton bike. I've had one since 2020, and I feel like it really got me through some of those dark days and kept me active. I love the instructors. They get me so hype when they have like awesome, awesome soundtracks that really just keep the fun, the excitement up as we're sweating it out and getting better every day. Wherever you're starting, get moving with Peloton Bike or Bike Plus Rental at www.onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply. You have now all this insight, but what were you like before the diagnosis? Like, what did you spend your time doing? What did you think your purpose was? Is the same as it is now? Like, obviously a lot changed and was not in the plan, but what was the plan?
The plan was nerddom forever. My dad's a historian. My mom's a music professor. All I ever wanted to do, like, we have so many books in my family home that there's just like those sad, unsanitary bathroom libraries. We were like, someone needs to do something. This is no longer safe for us. I love books. I just wanted to be a professor. And so I was really ambitious about it. I was going to do everything right. And I was happy to suffer for it because I thought you just put in your time and it's all adding up. And then someday I was going to have like a office with a turret and gargoyles and all these grateful graduate students who thought I was amazing. And, you know, And then some of it started happening. Mm-hmm. I got my dream job. Like, I married my high school sweetheart. I was like, I was crushing it on my Instagram life.
Yes.
and then I was, you know, like the first person in your friend group where the bad thing happens and you're mm-hmm. just, I couldn't believe it was me. I couldn't believe that it was, I was like 35. I had a brand new baby and I was like, oh no, okay. So I die at 35. And that the thought of it just exploded my sense of self. Cause I thought, and this was untrue, but I thought, wasn't I working my way into something special? Wasn't I special somehow? And that, giving that up, giving up being special was just awful. Mm-hmm. Being as special as everybody else is the friggin' worst.
I know. I still try to tell. I'm like, I am special. I am. But then yeah. I'm like,
yeah.
I still want to.
I believe
that. Do you still believe that about yourself?
It did something. It did something, and part of it is good, and part of it was bad. The bad part was, I was treated so badly in the diagnosis process, where it was. I mean, by the time I made anybody pay attention to my symptoms, it was already stage four. Because they didn't.
So you knew there was stuff going on.
Yeah. And I mean,
was it like your stomach pain?
Yeah.
I
begged, I pleaded. But the only reason I ended up getting the scan that showed my cancer was that I screamed at a human man in a doctor's office.
Yeah.
Which felt very not Canadian. And
you're from Canada. You're supposed to be just super.
I was so compliant.
Nice. And
I was like, hey guys, I'm in debilitating pain. But I think by the time I found out what exactly was wrong, I really did feel worthless. So when it was so bad, it like confirmed something in me that shouldn't have been confirmed, which was that I was disposable. Mm-hmm. And that feeling is something I saw in other people who've like walked a hard road. And that bit is like, it's hard to undo. That bit needs everybody to be like, no, you really are. Mm-hmm. The world would be so different without you. You are a delight and a gift. You know, like that part was wrong. And that's taken a bit. But the part that was right was that I was humbled. I thought I was like climbing a ladder to somewhere. Mm-hmm. And then it turns out I wasn't.
Yeah. just took the ladder and was like, nope.
Oh, no rungs.
Yeah.
Cool. How do ladders work then?
Yeah.
So trying to give up on believing that I am special, that I'm an exception to the rule, that life happens to all of us. Mm-hmm. That changed my life.
Yeah. And so. You're still.
I don't love it. But
then was there a part of you? And maybe this is not the right question to ask, but I'm going to ask it anyway. I kind of hate doing this, but this is a way that I guess I try to empathize and the world tries to do it. Be like, I understand. I don't understand.
Yeah.
But I don't understand. But I think I was so young when I had like these intense stomach pains. Mm. And I remember it was same. That's what so sucks about like, mm-hmm. The medical mm-hmm. everything in America is like it takes so long for somebody to actually believe you. But my mom, I think, yelled at someone and finally got everything to find out like, yeah, I had a malignant tumor and I needed care immediately. And I was, but then I guess then I did feel special because I was lucky or I survived or I didn't have to go through chemotherapy. And I really hate when people are like, oh my gosh, you had childhood cancer. I'm like, because I don't want to be put, I didn't go through all the pain I could have gone through. It was really scary. And my parents had to talk to the oncologist that was like, yeah, your daughter has a tumor on her pancreas that is filled with malignant cells. And we don't know if we can get it out. Like that sucked. I was sick. But then I'm fine. Uh-huh. Now, you survived the incurable.
Yeah.
Is there something in you that feels like oh, maybe all the great stuff I did saved me. Because yeah. we're in that I think that kind of gets to the prosperity gospel, yeah. like just like our life of like, if I've done all these good things, I might go through this bad thing, but I'm going to survive. But then on the backside of that, I know people that were also really good people, also other children that were around me that yeah. their cancer got worse and they died.
Yeah.
And so there's like this thing that I think we're all trying to balance of like,
yeah.
want to hold on to, yes, I'm special. And yes, something that I did matters. And the way that I talk and about myself and other people and the way that I pray and the way that I serve the Lord all adds up to something. But then when you do that, you discount the people or the alternative that could have been my life. That mm-hmm. how now do you look at that?
When I was in my 20s, I spent most of it interviewing people who were trying to preach the solution to illness, to poverty, to family mm-hmm. alienation. They, you know, the prosperity gospel, the idea that God wants to make you healthy, wealthy, and happy, and which is the dominant spiritual theology of about 60% of churches over 10,000. So of the biggest churches, it's the most popular thing that you're going to hear. Mm-hmm. And I spent most of my 20s ruining family vacations, traveling around with a little clipboard, interviewing the preacher and interviewing people in the pews. I spent, I guess, so much time with people who were saying the right prayers, who'd spent a lot of money, who traveled long distances, who were extremely, in my opinion, like very spiritually brave people to even ask for cures for things mm-hmm. that felt impossible. And I sat with people in wheelchairs, desperate to walk again, with parents who just lost their kids at funerals, at prosperity gospel funerals, which are, in my opinion, the saddest ritual in the world, is having to grieve something that they had just 1 second before said was impossible. And so I feel like I just have all of those stories in me about people who did all the right things. And so when I did all the right things, and it still happened to me, and now I'm doing really, really well, I guess what I try to hold in that thing is that one little space, is that thin space between the idea that everything is possible, which is prosperity gospel or health and wellness or everybody's recent cousin with an essential oil program that we're so happy for. And then the other side that we also can't do, which is that nothing is possible. And that is the place of despair and the place where we then don't know what our actions are for. And then we wouldn't even know how to try anyway. And I think that space between is something more like, what is possible today? And that is a good place. That is a place of, the words that I love are limited agency. If agency is what we can do, we have limited agency. But we still, but in there is still possibility.
Yes.
And anyone who's like committed to some kind of fitness program knows like these tiny incremental things can become something amazing. But trying to land all of our hopes on such a small runway is hard. Mm-hmm. And I think we end up getting kind of stuck between a lot. I'm constantly in the everything is possible. I'm like a New Year's nightmare. I have like 20 new resolutions. I'm like constantly obsessed with my own perfectibility. And then I'll pitch back into like, well, I guess nothing is possible. So
I'm that. I'm that. Where my engaged girls, congrats. You're engaged. So am I. Now you may be like me wondering what's next. If you're planning a wedding, the first thing you need to know about is Zola. Zola has everything you need to plan your wedding in one place, including venue options and all your vendors. Plus, you can get designs, save the dates and invites, build a free wedding website, create your registry, and stay on track and on budget throughout the entire process with their free planning tools. Zola has created everything you need to make the whole process super easy and hopefully actually enjoyable. There's even a 5-star app that helps you plan on the go or on the couch. Look, I have just now opened the can of worms of all that is wedding planning, but I'm so thankful for Zola because it can help make wedding planning so much easier for all of us engaged girlies. We need to be having fun. We need to be excited. It doesn't need to be a stressful process. And I feel like Zola can really help us engaged girlies enjoy this time of our life because we are celebrating the love that we have created and this beautiful new chapter in our life. And we do not need to be crying over napkins and invitations. So Zola's got us covered. Start planning at Zola.com. That's Zola.com. Today is about looking for new ways to better ourselves. But sometimes that means looking in a totally different place or even a different state. In South Dakota, travel is transformative. It's good for the soul. It's the kind of place to just let go, to escape from routine and predictability of life, to put down the phone and pick up a sense of adventure and to see the world a little bit differently, as in not through our screen. Life in South Dakota is about unplugging from it all and connecting with the world around you. It's about being open to real surprises and treating your senses to a real, raw, natural beauty that doesn't need a filter. Whether you're exploring the mountains and trees of the Black Hills, hiking through the Badlands, navigating the wild towns, or camping under the stars, South Dakota is the place to get a little lost and find yourself along the way. See why there's so much South Dakota, so little time at TravelSouthDakota.com. Do you think it's God's desire to bless us? Or like, what is God's desire for our life? Because I think that is in that in between. But what is it that he's wanting for us and from us?
Yeah. And blessed is such a perfect word because it gets so loaded in our culture with like Instagram hashtag blessed. There can be the version where we've kind of shellacked it with so much shine that we can't actually then say like, what are we really asking? What is God asking from us? And what are we even trying to do with our lives? Mm-hmm. And I feel like the blessing language is so helpful for me because it lets us try to practice answering that question. Like, so what does God want from us? And what should we do with our lives? Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, so much of what we've been talking about is like practicing cultural and spiritual honesty. Mm-hmm. So I think honesty is a start. What then in our limitation are we then pulled into doing? I do think that we're called to love and serve. Like, and most of it will be very boring. Mm-hmm. But like we are, our awareness shouldn't be the final goal. Is I just laugh because so much of the stuff that I read in self-help books is just trying to make me more and more aware of myself. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't do like the next chapter, which is like, well, great, cool. With all this awareness, then like, what am I for? Mm-hmm. We're for love. Mm-hmm. We're for like being in a web of love with other people and carrying the weight of their dumb lives too. So it's not just my dumb life. So it's so funny. But like all of this is trying to pull us into changing us. Mm, and most of it, I think, will be because other people need us too.
Yeah. I feel like I'm kind of in that, to admit. I think I never was aware, and now I'm like fully aware of everything. And I don't like where I'm like, I'm very self-aware of the things, and I'm not trying to wear that as a badge of honor. It's like now that I'm aware, how do I now believe?
Where do I go?
Yeah. What do I do with this mess? And to really be able to say, now that I know all the things I know about myself and have accepted that, to feel like God still is like, oh, but this is what now, this is all that I want you to use now. Yeah. There's like that part of awareness is important. But like you said, it's like, now that I know all this, how can I use my unique crap?
Yeah.
To actually help in some way?
I mean, there's a perfect theological word for that exact experience. And I like it when I think about limited agency, that we can change a little bit, but if we really want to, but also just what you're describing, which is that, like, but we are made to be changed. Like, the transformation is also like little blobby worm to butterfly. Like, we are also on this earth to become more. Mm-hmm. And like, the word is sanctification. It's like, it's the refining, making, transforming, making. We're supposed to be kind of made more beautiful in love. Mm-hmm. So I want to be sanctified. Like, it sounds a lot more boring than I'm hoping it's going to be. Because like, I want to be like lovely, mm-hmm, in how I know how to be useful to, mm-hmm, other people in this life.
But I also want to get to the place where I feel like, I know I'm not lovely yet, but I'm still worth a person that I can still reach my hand down, and yeah, I can't save someone, but I'm,
yeah,
I can bring them on a journey, yeah, too, or be there for theirs. And I don't have to be any other way than just me. Yeah. That's hard for me to get to. Just,
yeah, that's good, huh?
Believing, yes, I want to be sanctified, I guess. Is that how you say that? But I'm not fully there yet.
No.
But that's...
And I don't think we get anywhere. I think we just keep doing.
Is this just it?
Yeah. I think we get there. Weirdly, because there are a bunch of religious groups that I studied where they're called perfectionists, and they're like, done. And I was like, yeah, oh, that must be nice. Tell me how that goes.
You've studied a lot about religion. You grew up religious, mm-hmm, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Right? Christian?
Yeah.
Is there anything that while you were studying, searching, that you were taught to believe is true that you found maybe wasn't? And how did you not freak the freak out? You know, I'm hoping that's no, but
that's so great. I don't think I've ever been asked that question, and I really like it.
Not that so way. Funny. Not that. Not.
Yeah. Because I grew up in a funny. Sorry to this particular religious group, but I grew up in a pretty weird religious group called Mennonites, and they're constantly making furniture and baking things.
What's the difference between being Amish and Mennonite?
They're like theological cousins.
Okay.
It's kind of same.
So it's like
same.
A Baptist and Methodist person? Are they theological? Like, they're actually totally different.
Well, these ones both have a reluctance to embrace the modern world.
Okay.
And but still mostly do. Okay. and it's kind of like being part of a tribe, because it's like we would say ethno-religious group, but it's like an ethnic group and a religious group. Mm. So they've got like a language and their own food and their own jokes. And I like it.
Yeah.
I do. So I grew up in a religious world that had a bubble. And the bubble was really, it was fun in there. It was seamless.
So nice to live in a bubble.
The bubble was great.
Safe.
It was. And that has like a, I don't know. It has like a familiarity to it. I love those communities so much. And I feel really grateful that I got to grow up inside that feeling of people who know each other's stories. But the thing that I guess I have changed the most in is, maybe because I became a scholar of religion, is I'm constantly in other people's bubbles, watching them do things that are, mm-hmm, almost not always very familiar to me.
And they're always weird.
And there's so much weirdness.
They're always weird.
Oh man, every group is so weird. Yeah. My group included, but every group is weird. And I think that's made me realize that there's, every group has some stuff I really wish we could skip. And they almost always have one sort of superpower.
I was going to ask you if there was like a group that you studied that you were like, you ever felt like, oh, they have it, yeah, more figured out than everyone else? Or does everybody just kind of have their stuff?
Well,
you're like, no,
so one? Weird. I mean, I'm just thinking, I really like different, like, for example, if my life is genuinely going like fully off the rails, mm-hmm, I can't go to a very proper church because I will get a very proper prayer. and I'm not interested in a very proper mm-hmm. prayer at that moment, you don't understand how bad my life is. So I like going to the ones who go for gold, where they're just like, so certain kinds of Pentecostals, for example, mm-hmm. they're like, who knows what can happen? I was like, great. Yeah. Let's see what we can do. So that religious tradition I love for prayer. Other ones are way better if you say like need a meal plan and your family wants lasagna for 2 years, then you should become, you should join a like a Methodist or a Presbyterian. Baptists are great. Yeah. Yeah. I love. Or, you know, my Muslim friends are super good at the regularity of their prayer mm. and they're like on it, done. I'm like, oh, you really are praying for me. This yeah. is great. So I think the gift has been in learning to be outside my own bubble mm. and kind of being able to borrow from bits.
Isn't that, it's all scary, but I also think, and I want to know what your thoughts on this are. I have a lot of friends, especially like in LA, would say like all different religions are, we're all pointing the same direction, just on a different boat. Do you think that's true?
No, I don't.
Right?
No,
it's not.
No. And it's partly,
it sounds great.
It does. But that's because we don't know enough about other people's beliefs. And if we did, we'd be like, wow, that's really different.
It's different.
And you just, if someone feels like they're the same, just ask 5 more questions.
But isn't that, I think that's the scary part too. It's yeah. to be like, oh, we're so different. How can we be in
yeah.
community together? But there is a way.
I mean, there are all kinds of things that people can come to really beautiful agreement about the nature of God, about community, about justice. But in most of the particulars, well, it really depends which group, but it is one of my favorite things about being a scholar of religion is looking at the fact that because people have been woven through different stories over the centuries, mm-hmm. that we really do disagree about many, many, many things. And learning about the disagreement, I think, is where good conversation and also mutual understanding is built.
Are there still things in what you believe that it you have like a hard time?
Yeah.
Actually, like I say, I believe this, but this is really hard. I feel like I have that. And there's some things that I'm just like, God, I don't understand why you want it this way. It doesn't make that much sense to me.
Yeah.
But I'm just going to trust you. But I still don't understand. I don't know if I agree with that, God, which is totally. Also like
totally.
So ridiculous. I don't think any of us have it fully figured out.
No.
And. No. Part of that gives me a little peace. Also lots of anxiety because I'm like, well, which one's the best?
Yeah, exactly. Show me the right answer.
Yeah. But yeah. if nobody knows.
I teach at a divinity school. And so we've got a faculty of maybe 50 different people and who have 50 different sets of beliefs. But we're pretty close. But the differences actually do bring me a lot of comfort. It's because mm-hmm. we don't make tests for each other. There's no, I've never been in a faculty meeting where people like started picking on the particulars of other people's differences. Mm-hmm. There's just 50 unbelievably smart people. And if I really wanted to know more about that thing, I can go knock on their door. And that is my version of like the kingdom of heaven.
I was about to say.
Pretty smart people who are quite kind.
Quite kind and acknowledge what other people believe to be true. And that doesn't mean that it discounts what they believe.
Yeah. And they show up with food when I'm sad.
So that's where we need to go if you get
right.
cancer.
That's right. It's Durham. Come on down.
I do want to ask you about, maybe not death.
Do it.
But about when you are told that death is upon you. Mm-hmm. I mean, we all know it is. But like,
yeah, but then given, we forget.
Yeah, we forget. But then later. To be like really told like,
yeah,
no, you have an incurable cancer. I think of this song by Tim McGraw, like the Live Like You Are Dying song.
Yeah.
What? I think there's that. And then there's also, I think there can be a lot of other ways to.
Yeah.
To handle that type of news. And I don't think it's always like making bucket lists and checking them off.
Yeah.
But what was your instinctual reaction
yeah.
to that type of news? And like, did you go into action?
Yeah.
Did you grieve? Or were you making the bucket list?
Totally. Totally. So funny you brought up the Tim McGraw live like you were dying. Because I'm like, you know what happens when you're dying? Paperwork. You know what happens when you're dying?
It's like, when did... Did he just not do the paperwork?
I know.
There's and go so, ride that bull?
There's so many logistics to being miserable. Yeah. It's... I guess it really was all of the above. I mean, the most vivid memories I have of that are right when I would wake up, I would forget that I was dying and I'd have to remember all over again. And I genuinely couldn't believe it was me. Mm-hmm. It felt like it had to be a mistake because you're only in your own body, like, and you can't believe that your body is somehow like not being controlled by your like will and your heart and your love. You're like, I can't be dying. I have stuff to do and these people need me. So that kind of grief felt like a tidal wave. I mean, I had to make a lot of rules, honestly, to manage the grief. Mm-hmm. No sad songs. You know, no Taylor Swift after 7 p.m. Like, don't answer the question, how are you? Just like, you'll tell them by accident and then the day's over.
That is me all the time with just my brain and mental health. I'm like, please don't ask me how I am.
I'll tell you. Because
I will tell you.
And then my day will be worse.
And then your day will also.
And both our days will be not bad.
Be good. But you're like,
yeah.
Do I need to call someone? Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So the grief was sometimes overwhelming. And I do still sometimes, to be honest, feel confused about really like if I'm okay or if other people are okay. Cause I just have so many people in my life who are sick. And because of the nature of my work, a lot of people reach out. And so sometimes I'm like, oh my gosh, is the whole world dying? Is a thought that I have more often than I would like.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask you this one because I find this really annoying about cancer when people are like, it's like the fight of cancer.
Yeah.
You fall. It's like when people get on the other side of cancer, like you fought so hard. So does it mean the person that died didn't fight?
Yeah.
Why do we do that? Why do we say things like this?
Why do we win and lose?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, cancer sucks. And yeah. Like, let's put it on cancer, but not on the people of how hard they fought.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And that's
the biggest feeling of being the one that's sick is you do go from that language of feeling like you're losing the fight to, I mean, I don't think I had a stronger feeling than that I was a loser. That because I mean I was something awful is happening, not just to me, something awful is happening to everybody mm-hmm. in my life. My illness is extremely expensive. I'm ruining all the children's birthday parties.
I officially nightmare with small talk. I mean, like, I'm the round robin of terrible. So it was just,
I mean, yeah, I felt absurd, mm-hmm. you know. So every time someone's going through something awful, whether it's something people recognize as sad, like cancer or not, I'm always like, oh, hon, I know the feeling of like, I'm the bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a strong, it's a lie. But it's a big feeling
to get over or ever just be okay with. Yeah. You require a lot more. You require help. Was that hard to be able to receive?
It's horrible.
Yeah.
I'm very helpful. I would like to help you, Hannah.
Yes.
I would like to be helpful. I would not like to be helped. I'd like to prove to you that I am competent. Mm-hmm. And have it together. Please don't know more than that.
Yes.
Please don't see my house.
So please also don't ask me anything right now because I'm not going to help you, right?
Like, yeah, I was really good at looking invulnerable mm-hmm. and cheerful. I wanted to be like the best even sad person through, ever. Yeah.
So is that why you wrote, do you feel like you wrote the books to be able to tell the real
truth. I was lying. I mean, honestly, I lied to everybody in my life consistently because I wanted to be lovable again, wanted to be not the sad, horrible thing.
Or so, make it better. Do everything you could in your...
Yeah.
You can't change the cancer, but you can change your, how you are bearable with it.
Yeah. When my family, I mean, when everyone in my life read my books, they were like, oh. And I was like, well, I've really pulled that off.
Yeah. You wrote two books through a really hard part of your life. I feel like when I wrote my book, not as helpful, but I think I was processing for the first time when I wrote my book. And
yeah.
I think there's a lot of vulnerability in that, but then it's like looking back, it's not that I'm grateful, but that's where I processed for the world, for anybody to have, I guess. And there's an honesty in that that I think is really great and why people connect to stories. But for you, was there ever a time that you were like, oh, did you write the book, I guess, feeling clear about how you felt? And so I think that I wasn't fully clear. I was processing. Do you feel like you were processing the book? And now that you look back, you're like, obviously, there's a lot of good that came from it, helped a lot of people, but felt like, oh, maybe, not that I should have kept to myself, but like,
yeah,
this was a grand way to process. That's totally. How I feel.
Yeah.
I'm like, that was a grand way to process. Write a book for everyone instead of maybe just my journal.
It's so funny. I'm so sorry that happened. I was especially like that because with the first memoir, I really didn't think, I thought I was not going to live that long. And so I did say some things like, there was this guy I had this crush on in, like, I don't know, the dawn of time. And I had this really obsessive paragraph about how all my journals were like a record of where he was so that my diaries could exonerate him or convict him of a crime. And and then I saw him later. And I was like, oh, hey, Colin. So I was about that.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
I think you probably know.
I just wrote my little love letter and mailed it. And so there were some moments like that. It's not walking the plank is sometimes probably as weird as walking it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think that it's like now you've said it, you've done it. Then you realize, oh, that's kind of scary. But I think being able to put out something so honest in a way that I hope allows other people to feel like they can be like, especially with your book, and like, if you ask me, I'm okay, please read this book. Like to be able to give somebody who maybe can't find the words for how they feel in that moment to be the person that I guess had the courage in the fear of it all to say how it actually feels in this moment. And maybe it changes. Maybe I get grateful and maybe I'll feel this way. But right now, this is how I feel.
Yeah.
I think there's something really powerful about putting that into the world and then other people being able to like have that.
Yeah.
I think that's what you've done and like what I've found from I Love Your Devotion Good Enough, because I haven't written a lot of devotions and they make me feel like I should feel a certain way that I don't feel. But to be able to read something that feels like I feel right now, but there's still this glimmer of hope, because I think the hope's important, feels really nice because it's not asking too much of me. It's not asking too much of me in the time that really sucks. And I think that's really special what you have done and continue to do in your work and why I'm like so grateful to be able to have this conversation with you, because you've done great things, but you still don't skip over the parts that people like to skip over on their Instagram feed. And that's really cool.
It's because apparently I am no longer incapable.
Same. I'm having the friction of that.
Yeah.
Sometimes I just go thinking just real life, and I think a lot of people feel like this, it's like, if you're not doing well, that means you should go away during that time and then come back when you're good. But to be able to give the space and the freedom for people and the community for people to say, I'm not good, but I'm still here. And this is how I am.
Yeah.
I think it's really cool. And there should be more of that.
Well, I think I really do think you're doing a great job with that. You really are.
I am trying.
I think the
but
word
I'm looking
is
at you.
Authenticity.
Yeah.
And you have it, dear. You really do.
Oh, it's so hard.
It's the worst.
It's
yeah,
the worst.
It's much less marketable.
Last thing. If there's no cure for being human, which shit. Do you have like any remedies or some hope for us that you can give us? Just anything.
Yeah.
Oh, great.
Totally. Yeah. I promise. It's all wrapped up. 6-step plan. The things I do believe in more than ever, I think I believe in courage. I think life just takes more courage than I thought it would.
Mm-hmm.
And when I don't have it, then we just borrow it from other people. Mm-hmm. So I believe in courage. I believe in hope. I think that beautiful things are in front of us. And it is a story that God's telling us and other people who love us. And so I am really obsessed with hope. And I mostly just really believe in, I always say like interdependence, but it's just people. Like I believe that we're going to end up being carried by other people. It's just going to be really inconvenient and it won't be on our schedule. And most of those people are not going to be the shiny people that we would have imagined if we could line them all up and select them for their duties. But we will be rescued by others. So I do think it's going to be okay.
It's going to be okay. Might not be great.
Maybe even better.
And maybe better
tomorrow.
Maybe better tomorrow.
Thank you so much.
You're the best.
You're the best. This is awesome.
Thank you guys so much for listening to the episode. Better Tomorrow is produced by me, Hannah Brown, and Legos Creative. Our producer is Andrew Stalmer. Our show is recorded, engineered, and edited by the Legos Creative team. Remember to follow Better Tomorrow wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss the next episode. And don't forget to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It really helps and shows your support. You can follow me on socials at Hannah Brown, and you can stay updated on all things Better Tomorrow on our Instagram at Better Tomorrow and our TikTok Better Tomorrow Podcast.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.